Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Papanikolaou titled Mitofusin 1 Deficiency in the Heart. This article published online ahead of print October 28, 2011. My guests today are consulting editor Michael Wolin, senior author Kenneth Walsh, and leading expert Elizabeth Murphy. Let's get started.
Today we have a very interesting paper that shows the consequences of a cardiac-specific depletion of mitofusin 1, a protein that seems to be involved in the fusing of mitochondria, creating networks, preventing the fragmentation of mitochondria, perhaps. But we don't know that for sure, but some very interesting observations have come out of the paper. Initially, mitofusions or fragmentations of mitochondria have been associated with pathophysiological processes and roots into apoptotic cell death and bad things. The consequences of this study, I think, show some very new and interesting things that surprise us about the functioning of these proteins. Previously, Ken Walsh's group and collaborators have studied the depletion of mitofusin 2 and came up with some surprising results. They actually ended up seeing enlarged mitochondria, some mild cardiac dysfunction, and protective effects on what looks like cardiac myocytes related to the permeability transition pore and events that might follow that. Now I'd like to turn it over to Ken so he could tell us the exciting points and surprises perhaps that occurred along the way.
Sure, Mike. Thank you very much. Just so the listeners understand this in the proper context, I'll give a little bit of background. So mitochondria comprise approximately 30% of the heart and are required for meeting much of the energy demands of this organ. And recently, we've come to appreciate that mitochondria are not these static structures, but actually undergo processes of fusion and fission. And this process is referred to as mitochondrial dynamics. And this process is believed to be important for the rejuvenation of the mitochondria. And this mitochondrial fusion process is accomplished, at least in part, through the actions of two redundant GTPases, mitofusin 1 and mitofusin 2. And in this paper by Papanikolaou et al., basically we constructed and characterized mice that ablate mitofusin 1 specifically in cardiac myocytes. And we found that when we ablated mitofusin 1 in cardiac myocytes, it led to the production of small spherical mitochondria. In other words, they kind of became fragmented. However, these mice displayed normal left ventricular function, normal mitochondrial respiration, and somewhat surprisingly, as mentioned by Mike, they exhibited improved viability when they were challenged with reactive oxygen species. And furthermore, the in vitro studies on the isolated mitochondria showed that their permeability transition pore was blunted from opening. You know, what was sort of surprising about this is that it is widely appreciated that mitochondrial fragmentation occurs during apoptotic cell death. And in fact, mitochondrial fragmentation has been described in models of heart failure as well. And it's generally been assumed that perturbations that promote mitochondrial fragmentation will therefore also promote death. But this is really, it's clearly just correlative, in other words, guilt by association. And in our study, this clearly was not the case. By ablating mitofusin 1, mitochondrial size was markedly reduced, but this did not lead to an increase in cell death.
Elizabeth, there are many interesting sides to this story that have been raised by Ken. Comment, please, on what you find interesting of this study.
Well, one of the most interesting things in my reading of it is that both mitofusin 1 and mitofusin 2, which you published previously, they have opposite effects on cell size. Mitofusin 1 caused more fragmented mitochondria, where mitofusin 2 caused elongated mitochondria, but they had similar effects on inhibition of cell death and opening of the MPTP. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
You know, when you compare the mitofusin 1 and the mitofusin 2 knockout, there are interesting similarities as well as differences. At baseline, both hearts have approximately normal LV function. Myocytes isolated from both animals display improved viability. Mitochondria isolated from either the mitofusin 1 or the mitofusin 2 deficient hearts display marked delay in mitochondrial permeability transition. But what was the most striking difference, as mentioned by Tisch, between the mitofusin 2 and the mitofusin 1 knockout is that the mitofusin 2 knockout displayed enlarged mitochondria, whereas the mitofusin 1 knockout mice displayed smaller mitochondria or fragmented mitochondria. And that's just really quite a striking result. And we speculate that this difference in mitochondrial size is due to the differences in the inherent GTPase activities of these two proteins. So mitofusin 1 has an 8-fold greater GTPase activity than mitofusin 2. And what we speculate is that mitofusin 1 will facilitate mitochondrial fusion, whereas mitofusin 2, because it participates in the process as a heterotypic dimer with mitofusin 1, will tend to retard this process because it has a slower GTPase activity.
One other question that came out of the paper is, so mitofusin 1 and 2 are both outer mitochondrial membrane proteins. Do you have any speculation on how they might lead to alterations in inner mitochondrial membrane permeability, which one would think must occur since you have activation of the mitochondrial permeability transition pore?
Again, it's another surprising result. Both the mitofusin 1 as well as the mitofusin 2 ablation, regardless of mitochondrial size, we saw that basically the mitochondrial membranes were stabilized to stress. And in fact, cells undergoing stress were protected from cell death as well. And so what we think is going on is that we're stabilizing the outer mitochondrial membrane when we ablate either mitofusin 1 or mitofusin 2.
Ken, another factor that I've seen describing the difference between mitofusin 1 and mitofusin 2 is mitofusin 2 is described as tethering the sarcoplasmic reticulum. Do you think the interactions, let's say, between calcium coming from the sarcoplasmic reticulum and regulating mitochondrial function could be a factor?
You know, we see the same effect on mitochondrial membrane stabilization or a lack of permeability, whether we're looking at mitofusin 1 or mitofusin 2. So it's difficult to attribute just this effect to mitofusin 2 and some alteration with sarcoplasmic membranes. And in fact, even in that MCB paper, we actually looked at distances between the sarcoplasmic reticulum membrane and the mitochondrial membrane, and we did not really see that there were any perturbations in that length by electron micrographic studies.
Ken, where do you think this work is going? What are the implications of the study?
I would have to point out that so far what we've really done is we've just characterized essentially the baseline effects of what mitofusin 1 or mitofusin 2 has on the heart. You know, I think it's really going to be important to understand how perturbations in mitofusin 1 and 2 levels affect various cardiac processes, such as like development, particularly postnatal, early postnatal development. There's a lot of mitochondrial biogenesis, and there's thought to be sort of a mitochondrial maturation process as well. One would think that mitochondrial dynamics would be involved in that as well, and it would be interesting to know what sort of role mitofusins 1 and 2 would have in that type of process. And then, of course, there's, you know, the big question is, what role does mitochondrial dynamics have in cardiac disease as well? In response to stress, the heart undergoes a remodeling process. The mitochondria probably remodel as well. And if the mitochondria are remodeling, that probably involves mitochondrial dynamics. So it would be interesting, once again, to use these mouse reagents to try to tease out some of those processes as well.
Elizabeth, did you have any thoughts on what future areas of work might be stimulated or questions might be raised by this study?
One of the questions which will be raised in the future is how dynamics, particularly in tissue like the heart, where many of the mitochondria are not freely diffusing in the cell but are embedded in the microfilaments, how fission and fusion in a tissue such as the heart might be involved in cardiac disease. And I think that this paper changes to some extent some of our thinking about the role of fission and fusion in cell death. And I think this will be a topic that needs to be addressed, particularly in organs such as the heart, where the mitochondria, as I said, are more fixed in the cell, which I think is different than many other cell types in which fission and fusion have been studied.
Ken, I would like to thank you and your colleagues for a study that's undoubtedly going to lead to a lot of exciting new questions and work in the future. And Elizabeth, I want to thank you for your help in bringing out many important areas where this work could lead to new studies.
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.